So we think of the Gulf War as that little conflict set off when Iraq invaded Kuwait in 1990 and was repulsed by a huge coalition of allies in 1991. But the people of Iraq and Iran think of the Persian Gulf War as a much longer, bloodier conflict that took place during the 1980s over disputed territory on the northern edge of the Persian Gulf, which Iraq called the Arabian Gulf. The war between Saddam Hussein and Ayatollah Khomeini was one of the most brutal slaughters of the late 20th century. Missiles targeted its cities, chemical weapons facing waves of, in some cases, child soldiers who were mowed down until the battlefield itself was choked with corpses. The U.S. seemed to favor no winners in this conflict and certainly would do nothing to help Iran.
We're still holding back on that because the Secretary General of the United Nations is still seeing if he cannot persuade Iran to cooperate. If they don't, then we will have to face, in the Security Council, the adoption of the second proviso, which is the arms embargo on Iran.
President Reagan back in 1987, an effort that seemed to the world to be a way of ending the Iran-Iraq war. But recently declassified documents from the CIA tell a different story, that the U.S. played favorites in this conflict, in this stalemate, and actually gave assistance to Iraq, and in return was kept informed of the use of chemical weapons by Iraq, a practice the U.S. seemed to condone. With us is Rick Francona. He's a retired Air Force lieutenant colonel and a liaison officer in Baghdad during the 1980s. Colonel, welcome.
Nice to be with you, John.
So let's talk first of all about how much of a surprise this is, the declassified documents. That was inevitable. It was a Freedom of Information request, but there was a lot of suspicion about this.
Well, it was good to see the information come out. I mean, I was familiar with those documents. I had read them in the past. We were very aware through intelligence sources of Iraqi use of mustard gas in the early 1980s and their desire to develop a credible nerve agent capability. But it took them a long time to do that. Their earlier use of nerve agent was really ineffective. They couldn't get the formula right. They couldn't get the employment right. Even though they were trying to use nerve agents in 1984, they were not very successful at it. We didn't see Iraqi success with the nerve agent until 1988.
But we
were not aware of they were at the time continuing to deny the existence of chemical weapons in their inventory. I mean, I flat out asked them on numerous occasions, are you using chemical weapons? The answer was always the same, no, we don't own them.
But on some level, strategically, did the U.S. tolerate the use of chemical weapons by Iraq and hoped that Iraq would, if not win the war, keep Iran at bay indeterminately?
I know. I think that's exactly right. This happened in 1988. In 1988, we were involved with the Iraqis. I was in Baghdad working with the Iraqi military, and we were helping them, of course. I mean, that's come out in a lot of reporting. We were providing, general order of battle information on the Iranians, hoping to prevent the Iranians from winning. This was really not about the Iraqis. It was much more about preventing the Iranians from achieving a victory in the Persian Gulf and allowing them, of course, to spread their ideology wherever they wished. So after they liberated the Fal Peninsula, I was on the battlefield and I discovered a lot of atropine injectors. Now, atropine injectors, as most people know, is the military's antidote for a nerve agent. And the stuff was all over the battlefield. I asked the Iraqis, what is this? And they said, well, we use a lot of smoke in our artillery fire. And it may have confused the Iranians. They thought they were in a chemical attack. Well, we didn't buy the explanation, but it was an explanation. So I came back to the embassy in Baghdad, reported this to Washington. I also had some of the samples of the materials. And that immediately halted our program with the Iraqis. But a few weeks later, we were told to resume. And, of course, not being privy to the meetings, I can only imagine that the decisions were based on two very bad choices. You can assist the Iraqis, even though they're using chemical weapons, and achieve your national security objective of not allowing Iranians a victory in the Persian Gulf. Or the other choice would be to halt all relationships with the Iraqis and risk an Iranian victory.
Bad options in the Persian Gulf War back in the 1980s, an echo of what's going on in Syria as the U.S. considers its options there. Rick Francona is a retired Air Force lieutenant colonel and a former liaison officer in Baghdad.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.